I can't call those guys up and sell them something they don't want. It's just not going to happen. You know, they've either got to have a project, a budget, a need, a pain, and hopefully from eye contact them at the right time, I say something that's interesting to them and I feed them information, and eventually they go, actually, this sounds really cool and it meets the pain I've got over here. So, you know, I've seen instances where I've had relationships and I've never got anything out of it, but plenty of people around me have, because you've introduced them and it's been the right time. But, you know, what goes around comes around. If you then take something like Circuit, actually we have a platform that delivers on something auditors have to do. They have to get evidence from a bank, from a supplier, from a legal firm on behalf of their client. It's just, how do I do that? Is there a better way of doing it? And is it more cost effective? So
before we start this podcast, I've got one little favor to ask you. Can you please hit the subscribe button down below so we can help more people every single week? Thank you. Welcome to the Right Place podcast, where we learn with you how to build connections that matter, relationships that last, and businesses that thrive. My name is Rudolf Rotenbach, and today I'm talking to Jason O'Shaughnessy from Circuit. Jason, it's always nice to chat to you.
Hey, Rudolf. Yeah, likewise. It's a pleasure to take part in this, and we've known each other for a couple of years now, and I'm excited.
Let's just jump right into it. I want to start off with your title. I obviously had a bit of a look on LinkedIn and I saw business development, and with a prefix or a postfix, can't remember the full detail. What is business development in your view? What is it that you really do within that?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I mean, I suppose years ago it would be sales, you know, that kind of would be the title. I think now when you go in and your job title has sales in it, you know, it kind of scares people off. They kind of like, oh, not another salesperson. I don't want to buy anything. You know, this person, if I make eye contact, he's going to bewitch me, and then he's never ever going to leave me alone. So business development has kind of taken over, I suppose, that title. Although I think business development is probably the right description. And for me, if you think about the role that I would do under the guise of business development, it's, you know, it's opening new markets, it's growing contacts and building relationships with the goal of expanding your company's market share in a region or a vertical or somewhere like that. So, you know, you'll often find, and the reason why I think business development is a great description is because you'll often find that you may make contacts, speak to people, an organization, and actually there's not a good fit for what you do. But then in your next role or the role afterwards, you'll re-engage with that person again, because you know that actually from the conversation and the connection you had 12 months ago, this might now be a good opportunity. And vice versa, the person you connected with may have left and started a new organization and they reach out to you. And I think that's the difference between business development and sales. So I'm not trying to just sell Circuit in this example and our product. I'm actually trying to build relationships and grow contacts with the hope that we end up growing the company's products in new markets.
Yeah, it's a great description of it. I think it resonates with me, and mainly on what we do here on the podcast is we talk about relationship building, value adding, networking. And I think a big part of what you do also fits that mold. And you've mentioned relationship now two or three times in your talk about it, but how important is the relationship building, the fostering of that relationship for you in terms of eventually trying to sell to that person or to connect the two businesses to each other, potentially to utilize that relationship? I don't like the word use, but through the relationship to connect with the following person. How important is relationship building in what you do?
It's so important, because I think you kind of touched on it when you mentioned sales, is when you work for an organization where your product is a platform, and think Circuit is a platform with a decent sized ticket associated with it because of all the benefits it generates a business. You can't just knock on, in our case, our clients are accounting firms, specifically around audit. So think of KPMG or EY. I can't call those guys up and sell them something they don't want. It's just not going to happen. You know, they've either got to have a project, a budget, a need, a pain, and hopefully from eye contact them at the right time, I say something that's interesting to them and I feed them information. And eventually they go, actually, this sounds really cool. And it meets the pain I've got over here. So I can't just sell them something. And so actually building relationships is important, because to get to that stage, to get to the stage where you may end up having a success somewhere, it may have come from a conversation and a relationship 12 months ago, 6 months ago, that started somewhere else. And I think when you're building that relationship, there's a couple of things I think are important. One is people by people. You know, it's very hard. I think if you're talking to an organization and you're down to the last two companies, your company and someone else's, it's much easier for that individual to say yes to the person they like versus no. So I think, you know, it's always good to have a good relationship. But most importantly, you know, if you have a good relationship, a wide network opens up more opportunities. We've talked about that. I mean, think about how we connected and, you know, you recommended people, and it just builds and rolls and builds and rolls. And the key part of that is helping each other, you know, by building trust. Because again, I suppose if you're going back to sales, if you just put a product into a company that's not a perfect fit, you've ruined that relationship. That person looks bad longer term, so on and so forth. So, you know, relationships are really important. And a great example is, over the years, you know, I've seen instances where I've had relationships and I've never got anything out of it, but plenty of people around me have, because you've introduced them and it's been the right time. But, you know, what goes around comes around. Eventually it comes back around, but it's very important.
Well, so you've mentioned Circuit, and I obviously know what it does, but maybe tell us a little bit about what Circuit is, what you do. It's based in Ireland, and the problem that you solve.
Yeah, so Circuit, really innovative company. We've been around for about 6 years. The founder felt that there was a better way of doing a specific thing in audit, and actually in audit, that is confirmation requests. And you know, when he decided to leave the audit firm that he was at to start up Circuit, there was either a big provider that is in many countries around the world, has been doing it for many years, or it was a very manual process. And if it was the provider that's been around, it was a very expensive product and it was built on very old technology. If it was manual, we all know how painful doing anything manual is. So he created the Circuit platform. The Circuit platform has evolved since that day, but basically it helps auditors request confirmations from evidence providers for auditors. And so as an auditor, when I'm auditing my client, I have to go out to the bank and get confirmation that my client has these accounts and there's no defaults on those accounts and so on and so forth. I can't just rely on my client saying to me, yeah, my accounts are fine, I've only got three accounts over there. Confirming invoices with suppliers or confirming with a legal firm that represents my client that there's no outstanding judgments, whatever it may be. And we have a tool that you can manage all of that via a single dashboard. It's very cost effective and it's a very easy tool to use for everybody. And that's enabled us to really grow the South African market. On the back of that, we've introduced new things like client collaboration. So it's from the same dashboard that you can send confirmation requests, I can start sending requests to my client, you know, things like anything that I would normally request via email, I can request via the dashboard securely. So I can now manage everything from a single dashboard. And then we've extended that out to signing documents as well. So the idea is that if you're an audit firm and you're doing confirmation requests, which you will, you're collaborating, communicating back and forth with your client, and you're signing documents as part of that whole process, actually, you've got a single dashboard to control all of that. And so far, in other markets, it's been very successful, but in South Africa, it's been a real positive experience.
It's very interesting. I've been in audit myself when I did my articles and so on, and I remember that we do these manual confirmations over email. You have to fill in a lot of forms for the bank, and then you forget about it. And then by the time you have to finish up that section, you realize the bank never came back to me. Yes, and then it is a hassle. You start phoning and emailing and begging and so on. And you'll get the stuff eventually. And most of the times the balances are okay. There's no issue, but you need that evidence. You need the evidence. And if the bank doesn't provide it, then you're going to get stuck. I want to quickly just go off that a bit. So it's confirmations, but it's not just bank confirmation. So what about things like debtors, your external third party balances and so on? What do you include in that for these confirmations?
Yeah, and that's why we've had, I think, really steady success in South Africa, because you're absolutely right. Typically today, if you're an auditor and you request what you need, let's say you need to do bank confirmations, I need to do legal confirmations, I need to go to take a sample set of 15 suppliers and do an invoice or a balance request. And then maybe I might need to do some confirmation requests with insurance companies and maybe even funds and asset managers. With bank confirmations, I have to typically use a tool that's out there in the marketplace that has been around for a while. And for all the other, I have to do either manual or via email. With the Circuit dashboard, we give auditors the ability to send confirmation requests from the dashboard digitally to all of those evidence providers. And that's what makes it quite unique, because there's two elements to that. One, I can send all of those requests out from a one dashboard, so I can now manage and track those and see where they are and how late they've been out there and has anyone responded. And more importantly, Circuit has a team behind the scenes that actually chase those requests on behalf of auditors. So we take that painful, boring experience away from auditors, where they've got to maybe note somewhere in their diary, if I haven't heard back from X evidence provider by the 15th of the month, I need to chase them. We do that for them. And obviously, we hope that does two things: frees up time for the auditors so they can audit, and secondly, speeds up the response times for those requests, because we've got somebody chasing constantly on behalf of the auditors.
So we met at the SAICA Leaders Conference, I think 2023 or so. You come into South Africa quite frequently. You're going to be here in a while as well. What is your association with SAICA? How does that relationship work?
Yeah, I suppose in its most base form, we pay them to sponsor a number of events and everything else. But we choose SAICA because, you know, it's a trusted by accountants in South Africa. You know, we've done a number of their webinars and the attendances have been amazing. We believe that the investment that we put in to work with SAICA on a number of their events brings value to everybody. So it brings value to SAICA because they want to show that they've got knowledge of best of breed products that are coming into the marketplace and so on and so forth. It brings value to members because, you know, their members can see what the latest technology is and how the benefits could be seen by putting in new technologies. And then to Circuit. So obviously we build new relationships off the back of that. Plus also we learn a lot from that as well. Being close to SAICA, we learn what's changing in the marketplace. What are auditors interested in? What's their most painful experience in as part of the audit? And that helps us, you know, I suppose, pivot and tweak our product to best meet their requirements as well. So the relationship has been probably going now for around 18 months since we come into the market. We looked at them and thought that was definitely a partner that we want to be associated with. And so far, it's been a great relationship. They seem to be very happy, and we're definitely happy with the work that we've done with them.
A follow-up on that maybe is how important is this attendance and sponsorships of these type of conference to brand building?
It's so important. And it's important that you associate yourself with a trusted brand, because obviously if you believe as a member of SAICA, if you believe you trust SAICA and SAICA offers you good advice and it's a place to go to get the information on things you're looking for, then you're going to take seriously companies who spend money to sponsor their brand with inside their environment and also promote their products. And, you know, SAICA are very good in the sense that they won't, if I ask SAICA, oh, we want to, can you give us an email list and we'll email those people? They won't do it. So they're a very trusted brand. We've got to work within a parameter, and it's normally either we sponsor and attend an event and hopefully show some thought leadership and so on and so forth, and then give value to their members, or it will be something like a webinar where we'll attend and they'll choose something that's very specific, and then we'll contribute and hopefully add some value into that as well. So So yeah, it's really important. And I think since coming here, you know, the relationship with Saker has really helped get our brand awareness out there. There aren't many audit firms that we reach out to, and they don't at least know who Circuit is. They might not know exactly what we do, but they go, "Oh, I've seen Circuit. I've seen them on this event," or so on and so forth.
It always helps just to get the intro a little bit easier. And I'm listening to you in terms of all the work that you do to obviously expand your business as well, but which now includes these seminars, the webinars, the conferences, and so on. But in a tech environment, within a technology type business, what do you think is the drivers of business development? Is it still human interaction, or is it a mailing list? What are the things that brings you the biggest success there?
Do you know what? It's an interesting question, because I think there are so many different types of solutions in the tech space, you know, everything from Bitcoin to data connectivity to payments and so on and so forth. But I think providing a solution that works and is innovative, and more importantly, addresses a problem. So I have worked with companies over the years where we've had a great product. I mean, a product that you look at, it looks beautiful, always important when you put something on someone's desktop. It looks beautiful. Functionality has been amazing. When you present it, people go, "Wow, that's really cool." But actually, there's no real business case behind it. So you're actually trying to create a need for that company. Like a great example would be, in the past, I've worked for a company that offered personal finance management solutions. So basically, that's where a consumer would log into a PFM solution, if we call it PFM. They'd log into a PFM solution. They could connect all of their financial accounts, so their bank accounts, their credit cards, their bills, their investments, their savings. And as soon as they connected them, it would show them a single view of what money they had to spend at the end of every month, where their money was going, what percentage they spent on that. Did they have enough to put somewhere else? Which sounds really cool. And when you demo something like that, people looked at it and go, "Oh, that's amazing." But in the reality is, actually, when you roll something like that out, and we see that all the time, is actually roughly 80% of your audience manages debt. So when you give them a solution where every month they're seeing a graph that's still saying to them, "You've got no money to put anywhere, and you've got no money to save, and you can't spend any money anywhere," actually, you'll find that usage drops really quickly. So in one place, and so anyone that takes that solution is taking that solution because they believe in it themselves, which is a hard thing to find. If you then take something like Circuit, actually, we have a platform that delivers on something auditors have to do. They have to get evidence from a bank, from a supplier, from a legal firm on behalf of their client. It's just, how do I do that? Is there a better way of doing it? And is it more cost effective? So it's a much easier thing to pitch, because we know the people we're talking to have to do that. So I think when you're in the tech space, it's really important to obviously be innovative, but have something that delivers on a pain and a problem that people see, because then it makes it much easier. And then, you know, it sounds like, you know, I'm going back to the very beginning, but also making connections and building trust. It's still so important. I mean, that's probably relevant to any space, but in the tech space, one thing you've got to remember is you are talking to organizations, and you're trying to get them to buy into trust that actually, by putting this new innovative technology, and you're not going to leak data over here and somebody's going to hack it and it's robust and it's not going to bring your company down. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into that mix to make the perfect recipe, I think, for that in the tech space.
The very difficult thing I always tell people, if they ask me, "So where do you spend marketing money?" Then there's this old saying that goes, "Now you spend 100 rand and 50 rand hits the mark. The problem is you just don't know which 50 rand." And yeah. I think if you're in a position to nail it down to a specific funnel, it gives you a bit of a focused approach. Whereas sometimes we tend to go all over the show, newsletters and it just becomes so much that you can't keep it up. And for me, in the end, I always ask my business partner, how do we get into boardrooms? Because if you're in the boardroom, you've got a very good chance. But it's that matter of getting in the boardroom And we've tried a lot of things. And firstly, a referral from someone is the best. It's absolutely the best. It buys credibility. The problem is you need to start somewhere to get towards that referral. But I think as you grow and so on, it becomes easier and better. And then people start referring you, and it will help to grow as well.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. And it's, it's kind of, if you think about companies who typically, well, actually probably think about yourself, you think about the referral space. If I look into most, if you probably looked at the data in most organizations for where the product that they're selling or promoting has got a fairly big ticket on it, I bet you any money, the high percentage of those sales have come from inbound inquiries versus outbound yourself. Because again, there's a need, there's a requirement. Somebody might have said, hey, have you looked at Circuit? And you've gone on to the website and then so on and so forth. So you're right. And that translates, like you said, into the referral space. You know, when someone refers you, people go, oh, I know Rudolph, he's a good man, so he's not going to refer someone to me who is going to be bad or isn't going to be doing something for my interest. So it always makes sense.
Jason, you travel a lot, obviously for work and probably a bit for private things as well. And I want to delve into that a bit and see, you work in England, you stay that side, you work for an Irish company, travel to South Africa for business probably 3 or 4 times a year. If you have to tell me about the different business environments, do you think that across the world with the companies or countries that you are involved in, is it completely different or are we actually quite alike?
Yeah, some countries are very alike. Some countries are very different. And it really depends. I mean, there are some countries around the world where actually if you work for an American tech company, they'll love to see you. They go, oh, they're an American tech company. They must, you know, they kind of put you on this, on a pedestal, and they go, well, these guys must be doing the right thing. And getting an intro, getting inside the door and talking to these organizations go really well. There's some marketplaces that if you say you're an English company using American technology, the door won't even open up 2 inches. So, you know, and a classic example of that would be, you know, like, for example, when I've operated in France, it's a really hard marketplace to open if you're not a French company. Some marketplaces only respond to kind of business development on a local basis, so in their language and everything else. Whereas there are other marketplaces that, you know, if you go in and you don't have the local language and you send emails and the emails are in English, you still get a great response. So they all differ greatly. Some, and South Africa is a classic example, is very rare in South Africa that you don't know where you stand after you come out of a meeting. You know, it's very straight talking. You know, you, like in the UK, for example, you can have meeting after meeting after meeting and kind of feel like you're 80% near to where you want to be, where actually you're probably 20% further away for each meeting you're doing. Whereas in South Africa, it's a very open and honest approach to business, which I love. It's also the thing I like about South Africa is very entrepreneurial. There's a very entrepreneurial spirit. Everyone wants to do their own thing. Whereas, you know, other places around the world, you know, there isn't so much that space. Australia is probably very entrepreneurial as well. And it's not unusual that when I worked in Australia, you know, you'd bump into lots of South Africans in Australia that were started up their own thing or were very high up in banks and so on and so forth. So, they can differ. I mean, and normally language isn't the problem. It's normally just that you've got to know these nuances on how to deal and work with people. You know, what I might think is, you know, me being friendly and so on and so forth actually might be too overbearing to a certain country. And actually a great example is, I remember, like, if I'm in South Africa or in the UK, I meet with somebody at their office, we're walking to the meeting, we might talk rugby, we might talk football, we might talk something around sports as an example, as a way of breaking the ice. Actually, Brits love to talk about weather because it's so bad, but that's normally that water cooler chit chat, which really helps. If you go to somewhere like India, the chat between when you meet somebody and to the meeting room is stocks. What are you investing in? So on and so forth. So it's completely different. Oh, cricket, obviously, but what are you investing in? And that's kind of their thing. So yeah, it does differ around the world. It kind of is very similar, but can be very different. And those very big differences can be very small.
And you've been in a number of countries in a business capacity. If I have to ask within these environments, and especially the ones that play the same sport, what is it that brings us together? What is that thread that runs through these different countries on a business level?
Do you know what? I think it sounds like it comes from a book, but I think mutual respect and opportunity to help each other is because ultimately, anyone in the business world, I'm trying to bring my product to that company and hopefully they'll end up adopting that product. The individual who I'm trying to convince to take our product, it's got to work for them. It's got to make a difference to them. They want to put a product in knowing that in a year's time, 6 months, a year, 2 years time, that they can stand back and people go, oh, great. David did a brilliant job over here. Sarah, you know, she brought that product in and changed the way that we operate. So the idea is that your product is going to make the individual look good in their company. And that's obviously why we pitch our product, because we genuinely believe that's what it's going to do. If you're pushing a product that doesn't give you that, and also mutual respect. So, you know, if you talk to somebody and they say, look, this isn't the right time, so on and so forth, then you walk away. Or if you talk to somebody and after the first meeting, you think this is not a perfect fit, you've got to tell them, I don't think this is a perfect fit. Let's walk away. And you know what? With opportunities like that, you'll often get a call 3, 4, 5 months time where they've introduced somebody to you because they've said, look, you know, I've actually just spoken to somebody at a barbecue over the weekend and I think these would be perfect for you. So yeah, I think mutual respect and the opportunity to help each other goes a long way. And that kind of is a thread between all of those.
Yeah, I quite like that. I think the respect factor could be a perceived thing sometimes, but it's how you make that person feel. And if you're honest with him, he'll not be angry because he'll understand your position as well. I've got one last question that we ask everyone, but before I go there, I need to understand. So you work for an Irish company, you stay in England and you're from England. And obviously you visit South Africa, but I want to know first, who do you support in rugby?
So I would always support England as my rugby team, even though I have an Irish dad and an Italian mum. I would still always support England. And even though they are really bad, they have been really bad for the last, 12, 15 months, I still would support them. The nice thing about having a little bit of that Irish blood and Italian, well, maybe not. The nice thing about having a bit of Italian blood and Irish blood is, you know, I can sway a little bit to Ireland if they're doing really well. And I can always sway a bit to Italy if they're doing really well in the football, which they haven't for a while. But so I've got that benefit.
Question with them. Yeah, one day you must come to South Africa when there's rugby here and we'll take you to one of the big stadiums because probably like Twickenham, but a lot of our stadiums are quite big because of the Soccer World Cup that was here back in the day. So that last question that I spoke of, and we ask it to everyone, the show's called The Right Place. And I want to find out whether you believe that you are currently in your right place.
Yeah, so I've heard this. You finished on this question before, and it feels like an easy question to ask, but you know what? But it's not. But when I look at it and I think about it simply, I guess the answer is I think so. When I look at my life, I mean, I'm enjoying family life and work. So, you know, I'm fortunate at the moment that I'm actually enjoying the two things that take up the majority of my time, family life and work. And I'm healthy. So as long as I've got those three things, then I think at the moment I'm a happy, happy man. I would like my son to have a job, move out, and so he can become self-sufficient, but that will come.
You just said you've got a happy family. I will leave that with you. Jason, yeah, thanks for your time, and I appreciate it. It was fascinating listening to you in terms of especially the relationship parts and how you drive those relationships actively to ensure that you get value out of them firstly, but also that you you give value. And it's not just a taking scenario of building because you want to sell. I quite like the example of if someone closes a door and he moves on to another business, that is a new potential opportunity. But you only have that opportunity because you've treated him well before. And I think that is something that we can all aspire to do and to work on a bit.
Yeah, and a good example of that being, I mean, I've been operating in South Africa now for about 15 years. I've been coming in once a quarter for 15 years. So it's been a long time. And in that time, I've worked with organizations that have had completely different products. And one of the two things that tie that together are fintech companies and banks. And when I look at in the role that I have now, you know, those relationship with banks that I've had historically have really helped now. And, you know, you wouldn't been able to call up those people in the banks that I worked with previously if you didn't think they had that trust or felt that you had their best interests at heart as well.
Jason, I appreciate your time, and we're going to leave it at that. And to the rest of you, we'll hope to see you again at the right place. Bye.